Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Yep, whip,
listener depression is advised. Welcome to the Savage Nation. Not listener discretion, but with what Obama and the Democrat socialists are doing to this country. I should change the motto of my show from listener discretion is advised to listener depression is advised. But here's a question for you. All of you smart people out there, all you geniuses who are so sure that progressivism is the answer and that liberalism is the road to nirvana, what percentage of the population, of the workforce, rather, in Cuba works for Fidel Castro, for the federal government of Cuba? Don't call me because I'm going to give you the answer. I'm doing this to attract the attention of the fools out there who think they know the answer to everything. After all, the bums who are sitting in the parks want free education, free health care, free housing, free food, and a free automobile. And they get most of that in Cuba. You know that there's free health care, free education, mostly free housing, and even subsidized food? It's a worker's paradise. Now, of course, what you don't know is what percentage of the workforce works for the Fidel Castro gangster regime. The answer is 80% of the population works for the government. And you can go there and live in the worker paradise. You don't have to lay in Zucchini Park, or you don't have to burn Oakland down. You can go to Cuba. You get your free education, your free health care, your free housing, your free food, all sorts of free things in Cuba. And you'll go to work for the government. You'll get a nice job, and you'll earn $20 a month. Now, why am I telling you this? I'm telling it to you because the fools, the children who have gone to college, who are largely fools, they come out fooled. It doesn't mean they're inherently stupid. They're on drugs from the time they were a child by a quack doctor who says they have DDD or DDT or ASLMFT, DDS, ADD, and they give them a pill. Then the kid comes up to the next stage and they put him on another prescription drug. Then they use marijuana because it's natural. So the child is a fool. The brain has been garbled. And the child comes out thinking that a government should provide you with free housing, free food, free health care, free education. They don't understand that it takes the private sector to produce the profit that the government uses in order to supply these things. They think that the government gets it from somewhere, which is nowhere. They don't even understand this, the basics. So when I read this from the Miami Herald this morning, that 80% of the workforce in Cuba works for the gangsters, the Castro brothers, Cuba's government employs about 80% of the workforce, paying wages of just $20 a month in return for free education and health care and nearly free housing, transportation, and basic foods. That's everything that the bums who are smoking pot in the parks and screaming about Occupy want, isn't it? Why don't they just move to Cuba? Well, the answer is because they don't have to move to Cuba. The answer is because with fiscal socialism in America and with the great increase of the number of government employees, local, federal, state, especially under Bush and Obama, we are not approaching 80%, but we're getting closer and closer and closer to a government that employs a majority of the workforce. And when that happens, your wages will go down, your standard of living will go down, and you'll be sitting around playing dominoes and driving 1990s Toyotas for the rest of your life. Fiscal socialism, of course, did not begin with Obama. I had told you, if you're listening to the Savage Nation for a while, that it was George Bush who actually introduced fiscal socialism on a grand scale. Many of you didn't want to accept it because you're students of the Wallbanger School of non-thinking. You are students of the wall banger and of the blackboard. But it was George Bush himself who busted out the economy. I was the only one screaming in the wilderness, amongst the conservatives, that is. And I was calling Bush a fiscal socialist, if you remember. I can give you the data if you'd like it. Government spending under Bush key increased by more than 55%. Now, why am I telling you this? It's so that you don't think it started with Obama. The thing for you to understand is that Bush increased federal spending by 11.4 to 20% of GDP. Bush increased aid for student assistance by 129%. Bush increased spending for unemployment insurance by 28%. Bush increased welfare spending by 32%. Bush increased medical care expenditures by 54%. Bush increased Social Security related payments by 19%. So in other words, yeah, you can get mad at Obama, but you have to understand that the system, the Democrat system, the Republican system, started long before Obama. He's just made it much worse. Now, how you could have faith in this man, I don't understand. But don't blame him for the whole problem. You understand that? So I don't think I need to talk much more about fiscal socialism. It is Friday. Most of you could care less. This is the week of the rabble in the streets. Thank God the snow hit on the East Coast and we had a little bit of rain washing away the fecal matter on the streets of Oakland, but not enough of a storm to drive them back home to mommy with the sniffles. We can talk about all of the topics of the week. We can talk about open mic to mic on the Savage Nation. I'll even take lifestyle questions for those of you who are lacking a father or a brother or a husband who has some testosterone-ridden advice to give you as to how to go forward in the world. If you have a problem and you think I can help you with it, give it a call, 1-800-449-8255. So again, we can go back to fiscal socialism. The main point is that Cuba has it, fiscal socialism, free education and all. So I don't want to repeat myself. But America is moving rapidly in this area. And what I want you to understand is that Obama is nearly continuing a policy of fiscal socialism that was greatly magnified by George Bush. We may have a Marxist in the White House, but fiscal socialism started long before Obama. And if another fiscal socialist is nominated by the Republican Party, it may not matter whether he or Obama wins the election in 2012. Either one would take us further down the road to a massive government expansion and a Cuban-style economy, which is not good for anybody listening to this show except the bums. Okay? Except the bums. The bums, bums, bums who want something for nothing.
Oh, we put into the system. We want to take back what's ours. We want a free house. We want free education, free medication. Free dope. We want free.
That's what the morons are saying when they come out of college. Somebody should give them something for free. So there it is. That's the truth of the matter. Would you like to talk to me? Give it a shot. I gave you the number. Let's go to the callers. Atlanta, Georgia. Colin, you're on the Savage Nation. What's on your mind?
I'm giving a speech in a week to an audience of college professors and seeing people from CNN for extra credit for a college class. And my topic is the advantages of economic freedom, and I want to know if you have any advice as to how I should approach it.
Yes, I do. I want you to go, I mean, this is an easy one. You start with the model of what happens when there is no economic freedom, which is Cuba. Because this is not the Soviet Union where you're talking about something from 20 years ago. Cuba is stuck in amber. It fell into an amber pit a long time ago with the two gangsters who took over the country, who kicked in the doors of homes and said to the people, get out, Fidel now owns it. But let's, don't do that right off the bat because they won't listen to you. Go to michaelsavage.com and see the article that I put up there in my headline, okay, about how many people work for the federal government in Cuba and what they get for it, free education. So here's how I would start. I'd start, tell me the title of your speech.
It's the advantages of economic freedom. It's supposed to be a persuasive speech.
Okay. So you start with these wonderful geniuses in the media who are going to be sitting there and listening to you. And you say, you know, many of the bums in Zucchini, don't say bums either. You want to not alienate your audience right away. Many of the radical protesters in the parks of America in the Occupy movement want free education, free health care, free housing, free food, and free transportation. And they want it from the government. And they also want to work for the government. Well, there's a place on earth where they already do this. And that's Cuba. 80% of the workforce works for the federal government in Cuba. The Castro brothers, the Castro gang controls it, okay? But they only earn $20 a month. That's an example of what happens when you don't have fiscal freedom. And go from there. Just embroider from there. And then keep going back to the free things and what percent works for the government and what they make a month. You understand? Keep going back to the main point.
Yes, I do. And do you have anything else? What could I say to downplay the success that China's had over recent years and how they're obviously not a free market?
But they are. They are. They see, this is a hybrid economy. They're not a communist nation. They're a fiscally... it's a hybrid nation in that they are a socially communist nation where the police and the government control every aspect of the life of China up to a certain point, certainly not as bad as it was under Mao Zedong. But the fact of the matter is, in terms of the economy, it's a raging capitalist society. They have more freedoms in China than we do here. The government has less control over the booming economy than the gangsters do in this country. We are more strangled by regulation, by taxation, than the Chinese are, which is why they're booming. Make no mistake about it. So everything that the Chinese threw off, the shackles, this government has taken on. And that's why one of the reasons we're crippled in this country. Taxation and regulation by the federal, state, and local governments. So don't fall for the trap that China's a communist society, and therefore, how do you explain it? They're not a communist society. Other than the fascism of the society itself, meaning the social order is controlled by the government, which is unlike here, isn't it? Here we're fiscally socialist, and we're socially completely anarchistic. People can mate with a fire hydrant if they want here, and they'll be supported by the government.
Well, thank you. I'll have to let you know if I get thrown out of the university for it.
Well, you shouldn't be thrown out of the university for it. Just go to my website and write it down. This is the Savage Nation, 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. I'm already 19 minutes into the hour. I could see it's going to be a wonderful Friday. I could see the callers are very interesting. We've got advice questions. We've got stories about pensions and how they're killing us. We've got people calling me about dreams, mainly mine. Dreams from months ago they were talking about. The Black Angel, I remember that dream. I just talked about it the other day. Remember the Black Angel I told you about who stopped the man... Who tried to kill me on a bicycle? That was an interesting story unto itself. I do believe in angels. I mean, up to a point. I'm not a child in that regard. I mean, you can get very distracted with fantasy and really get hurt. And I'll be right back.
Savage.
I found my thrill on Blueberry Hill.
No, this is not Herman Cain at the National Press Club. It's Fats Domino. He's going to have some career as a talk show host after he's run off the rails by both parties. I envy him. He's going to be a syndicated talk show host. Phone News will give him a job, have a best-selling book. What publicity. But, I mean, the price is very high that he's paying. There's a couple of interesting articles on my website. Why does my dog sleep belly up? You know, I was up early. I was perusing. I went on a veterinarian website. And one of the questions was, why do dogs sleep on their back? Some dogs, like in your bed. I know this is anathema to old-timers where dogs... My dog, when I was a kid, the thought of a dog on a bed was my father would have gone ballistic. He would have gone crazy in the house. Are you crazy? No dog on a bed. And he was right. You want fleas, you want the viruses, you want bacteria, bring your dog in bed. You want drooling saliva. You know, nobody had a dog in a bed those days, but today it's a different world. Many of you know that your dogs sleep in a bed with you, and I won't go into the potential for the disease transmission, but some of them sleep on their backs with their belly up, and they say the dogs that sleep on their backs with their belly up tend to be secure and well-socialized, which is true because in nature... No animal would sleep on its back, right? Who would expose their belly in the animal kingdom? They wouldn't. The wild cousin would not sleep like that. It would sleep in a curled up position waiting to be attacked. Who would offer up one soft underbelly while you're most defenseless? I mean, a predator would rip you apart. So if you have a dog that sleeps like that, it means it's a secure, well-socialized animal. Now, what if you have a dog that doesn't sleep that way? Who knows? I'm not interested. But it's an interesting question. The biggest question is, should dogs sleep in a bed with you? I don't even want to take that call because we're going to spend the hours on it, which has no meaning at all. You know, I did the socialism thing already. You're not interested in Soros' connection to Occupy violence, but it's on my website from WorldNet Daily. It's great stuff. Freddie Mac, corrupt, dangerous, damaging. Barney Frank, Chris Dodd, asks for $6 billion more after losing $4.4 billion. Why is this company in business? Why is the federal government? That's what Cuba has, is a Freddie Mac. You may as well call it Castro Mac. Freddie Mac is a government-owned housing division. Okay? That's what Freddie Mac is. It's Cuba-style housing loans. But what's the point am I getting excited for? I'm going to get excited for what reason? What good is it going to do me? What good is it going to do you? The Nicorette Chewer-in-Chief is in Europe right now, chewing away, the Nicorette Chewer-in-Chief, hobnobbing. Five actors who haven't aged well is another interesting story I found from my website. We all get off on this. Remember Val Kilmer, how good-looking he was? Remember him in Top Gun back in the 80s? Remember the movie? What was that other movie he was in where he played one of the doors? He played a door. Remember him? He was great. I mean, the women swooned over him. You got to go to my website and take a look at what happened to him. And the guy who wrote this, five actors who haven't aged well, he's very, very nasty. Robert Elsenpeter, contributing writer to some website, said years haven't been kind to these celebs. He shows Val Kilmer now. Basically, he's very tubby, looks horrible. He has him wearing a black hat. His face is very fat. And here's what he writes. He says, lately, the former Adonis appears to have spiked more donut holes than volleyballs on a Pensacola beach. These days, Iceman looks less like the Lizard King and more like a post-sex change Chaz Bono. Oh, last up, which actor went from He-Man to Girly Man? And you know who that is going to be. Now, for those of you who are misogynist, the next one he skewers is Kathleen Turner. Remember how beautiful she was in the 80s? You do not want to look at her now. You just don't want to look at her now. All I can tell you is it's not pretty.
Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. It's Friday, so we're trying to lighten it up a little bit, talking only a little bit about Obama's socialism and about the death of the West. You know, just a little bit, very minor, and changing the set and frame to the extent that we can without losing the core of the show, which is the madness of America and the fact that most of you are perplexed by the insanity that has been imposed upon you by the radical communist regime that has taken a hard line against the American people. So I'll go to the callers now. Clayton in Houston, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hey, I married a liberal, and trying to get her way of thinking more of on a logical sense.
No. Let me explain something. I'll do it in a way that I don't alienate my women audience. A friend of mine is a young guy, and his father said to him, all women are nuts, some are more nuts than others. So let's start with that. Now, I don't believe that's true. There are women who are more rational than most of the men I know. But by and large, you have to understand, if you married a woman who's emotionally different than you, which you would expect, that's what you were attracted to, right? You were attracted to her because she was different than you. You can't try to change her thinking, and don't try to change it, because it's not going to work. I think you should live with each other and have differences of opinion. That's the only thing I can suggest. The more you try to change her, the worse it's going to get, Clayton.
Well, she thinks that I voted for Obama just because he was a black, or I didn't vote for Obama because he was a black guy. And then I tried to show her about the Al Gorlone crime family and trickle-up poverty. And I was telling her to read some stuff out of that, and I snuck out of the room. And then I looked back in there, and she was still reading it. And then I came back in the room a minute or two later, and she had put it down. And I was just like, well, you need to read some more of that. It's great. It's going to teach you a little bit about what's been going on in the past, but she's a teacher, and she's, you know.
All right, so wait, so she's an educated girl. Did she acknowledge that she read it?
Yeah, she did, and I try to, you know, try to talk to her about it when we'll go out and have some wine or whatever, and I will start talking about politics, and that's where the dividing line is all about the politics type thing.
Look, how long have you been married, Clayton?
2.5 years, but we were in kindergarten together.
Okay, you don't want to lose your marriage, is that correct?
No, absolutely not. She's a sweet girl.
All right. Then don't look for a civil war in your household by trying to convert your wife to your way of thinking. If you have that division, it's going to stay that way. It may change slightly. She may move a little bit more in your direction. But it's unlikely she's going to one day wake up and say, you know, Clayton, you were right all along. The country is a wreck because of fiscal, social. She's not going to go there. It's her fundamental orientation is what it is. You're both in, you're young, though. How old are you?
I'm 38.
You're not so young. Do you have children?
I have one daughter from a previous relationship. And we're trying to work on building a family and everything. And, you know, she's a sweet girl. It's just had some fertility problems.
Now, the reason I'm asking you that is usually when people get older, they become more conservative. Once they face the fiscal realities of life, that's when they start to change their thinking. And the only way, here's the last piece of advice, because we could talk about this for forever and bore people. The only area she's liable to move in your direction readily is in the area of fiscal conservatism. If you could explain to her what fiscal conservatism is, that no one gets anything for nothing, there's no such thing as a free lunch, and that you can only tax people so much, go to the article from today, print it up from my website, and show her that 80% of the people work for the federal government in Cuba, and they have free everything, but they only make $20 a month. And explain to her that's what happens when a government starts to give out too many jobs. And remember, what's Obama trying to do now? He's trying to create more government jobs, isn't he? Or if it's not outright government jobs with the so-called jobs program, he wants to give it out through his cronies so that they work for the government through grants or contracts. It's the same thing. Clayton, thanks for the call. Or have her read Abuse of Power, the novel. Now let's go to the next caller, Sacramento, California. John, welcome to the program. Go ahead, please.
Oh, thank you, Dr. Savage. I love your show. You touched me a while back. You were talking about the Black Angel, and I know when you probably described this to friends at the time, they're probably saying, oh, Michael, you were dreaming or whatever. But I've had a couple on my own that I noticed. One time I was standing between two trucks. For some reason, I was walking between the trucks, and I was about to look around the truck to see if someone was coming. And for some reason, no reason at all, I stopped. At that second, a lady was talking on the phone and sidewiped both trucks. I would have been 1 second. I mean, it happened like 2 feet in front of me. I'm like, why did you stop? I don't know.
All right, so either you had a survival instinct or you had your feelers were out, premonition. But what does it have to do with my Black Angel story?
I believe it's a guardian angel. I've had another one where I was driving down the road and for no reason, I just changed lanes. There was no one on the road. It was in the middle of the night. I changed lanes and I missed a car that had ran into the overpass, and it was upside down in the middle of the freeway, totally black sideways.
Oh, my God. That's amazing. Well, so you have a sixth sense then. I mean, you didn't have an angel come down and say, change lanes, did you?
No, but for some reason, I did.
Yeah, but maybe you're a guy with Neanderthal-level premonitions as a hunter. You still have your ancient survival mechanisms operating. You'd be a good warrior. Were you once a soldier?
Well, you know, no, but the thing is, when I heard you explain your situations with the nun that didn't exist, and you tried to give her money and she didn't exist, and the trail in the dark down in the jungle when you walked around the edge of the mountain, and all of you went there the next day and said, how did I not die?
Oh, you remember every story I've ever told, man. You are amazing. But you've put them all together into one whole. No, I do believe that there's something else out there. And I do believe that when that bicyclist tried to kill me by accident in San Francisco going the wrong way, and I yelled at him and he stopped and he was menacing me with his bicycle. He was younger and he was bigger and it was going to be a very bad confrontation. And I had very few options at that moment. And this black man came out of nowhere. He looked like an older Jimi Hendrix. He was gray, but he was a dead ringer for Jimi Hendrix. And he did some magical stuff. He said, hey, guys, I don't know. He did almost mumbo jumbo on us. And he basically said, put down the axes, and the ass on the bicycle left. And then that guy left. I never saw him again. And it's a neighborhood where there are very few African-American people. I got to tell you that. The man came out of nowhere. So I have to believe it was a black angel.
Right. And then when you tell somebody, I've told these stories. I've had more, you know, like you probably, you've had more than one. And when this things happen, they go, oh, it was just a coincidence. And you
well,
know.
That's right. Remember that time in Fiji? I told you I've been up drinking all night with the Fijians, drinking kava kava during my plant collecting days. And then in the middle of the night, I didn't want to stay there anymore. I got a terribly spooky feeling from being in that hut with everybody. And I normally never do. But I woke up with almost like a premonition. I had to get out of that straw hut. It wasn't that anyone was going to hurt me, but I felt that there was an evil spirit in that hut. I felt that an evil spirit had invaded that hut and was going to invade my body. I'm telling you, it was something like that. And it was like black magic was going to be put upon me, the white man in an all-black village. Something was really bad about to happen. I spent enough time in those villages to tell you when something bad's going to happen. Anyway, I got up at 3 in the morning and I started... I'm going back to the main village, and my friend said, you can't go. It's in the middle of the night. I can't go with you. It's too dangerous. And I said, I don't care. I'm leaving. And they warned me not to, and I walked back, and I remember hearing the ocean crashing below me, you know, crashing like in Robert Louis Stevenson crashing, hundreds of feet below me on the side of the ridge, and I was walking, holding on to, like, plants. And the next day, I retraced my steps, and that trail was 4 or 5 inches wide. And then there was it just crashed right down into the ocean. I didn't have a flashlight with me. I mean, who guided my feet? I don't know.
Right. That's what I'm talking about. And if the thing that I know you realize that wasn't just luck. And when I tell these stories, people say, well, it was coincidence or something. And no, it wasn't. So I'm not a religious guy, but there is definitely something bigger than me that protects me from doing certain things. I guess it's not my time. I don't know.
Hmm. It's an interesting story, and I don't have an answer for you other than to share stories with you of similar experiences, and we have to leave it at that. But I'm going to send you a present today, which is Abuse of Power, which I'm sure you'll enjoy reading. It's a great book. It's a very thrilling novel. Very interesting call. I mean, here's a man who listens to the show and remembers all of these small, diversionary stories of what happens in my life going back many years, and he puts them all together into one whole. And I have to say, he made me think about it, you know. So, I mean, how do we get where we are? How did we get where we are? Do you ever think about the miracle of that? I don't want to get too esoterically philosophical right now, but anyone listening to this show think that you're here alone and you're by accident? I really don't think so. Think of the millions of years of evolution going back to your most distant ancestor in your family line, and think of what it took to produce you. Think of the amazing journey that your DNA has had to be you, sitting in that car or wherever you are. I'll tell you another story. Here's a new one, a fresh one from today. I'm a loner, okay? At this stage of my life, I'm primarily a loner. It's just the way it is. So I'm eating alone today in a Chinese restaurant, a big one, a commercial chain, and I like it that way. I wasn't in the city. I was out in the suburbs. You know, just eating a big place. I get the fish, whatever. Two guys come up to me in this big empty restaurant, younger men in their 30s, and they said, we don't mean to bother you, but are you Michael Savage? I said, yes. They said, well, we love your show. We listen to you. And it was very rare this happens for a number of reasons. So I said, no, I'm glad to, you know, the food hadn't arrived, so we talked. And we were just chatting about Herman Cain and could he win, and one of them was sure he couldn't win. And he told me the most amazing story about his lineage. And I don't know that it's right for me to share it with you, but it was miraculous how his parents met and where they met and the cultural and racial mixture of this man was astounding to me. And I said, my God, the story of your parents is worthy of a novel if you ever could write that story. And I'll leave it at that because I don't want to get too personal. But each person really is a miracle when you think about it. And that's why human life is sacred. And that's why if you save a single life, it is as though you have saved the entire world. And that's why when I see people who have no regard for human life, no regard for human freedom, I realize that they are actually evil people. And of course, we don't have to now start naming names because you know who they are. They're not all in politics either. One last note on this little diversion. There's a difference between bad people and evil people. And I defined it today for somebody on the telephone. And she said to me, what's the difference between bad people and evil people? I said, bad people are unscrupulous. They will do whatever it takes to get what they want from their fellow man. They will steal from him. They will lie to him. I said, they're just bad people. They're not necessarily evil people because they're doing it for personal gain. I said, an evil person will do all of that, and they will hurt people simply for the sport of it. And she said, you're right. That's the difference between evil and bad. I said, now you know the difference between a bad person and an evil person. Remember this. There are evil people who will hurt you or hurt others just for the pleasure of hurting them. That's evil. No personal gain. That's evil. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Devil or angel, I can't make up my mind. Which one you are, I'd like to wake up and find.
Listen to Depression Advised. Welcome back to the Savage Nation. I know, the opening of my show is very funny. Listener discretion advised, which is funny, but I think we should change it since these couple of years under Obama. The new motto should be listener depression advised. How do you deal with depression is a really interesting question. I mean, we all suffer it one way or the other, no matter whether we acknowledge it or not, some more so than others. You know, I have never actually talked about it, but I have been struggling with, I struggle with things my whole life. I've just overcome them. That's all. I deal with it. I mean, there are days that I'm in a dark hole, and as successful as I am, I mean, a PhD, wonderful family, very successful, and I feel isolated. I feel like I'm in a black hole, and well, so what? I come out of it. I use exercise primarily. I could always come out of it with exercise and vitamin C, incidentally. Exercise alone won't do it, but exercise with a mega dose of vitamin C powder will almost always do it. I mean, I've tried to tell you that vitamin C powder will cross the blood-brain barrier faster than almost any substance next to heroin. I believe this is still true. You see, it's a very small molecule. Vitamin C is a small molecule. It's synthesized from sugar, even though the relationship to your body is totally different than that of sugar. But it's a small molecule, and so it crosses the blood-brain barrier very rapidly, and you get the immediate effect of it. Years ago, I wrote a book called Getting Off Cocaine. I never used cocaine, but I wrote a book on it because that was my field of nutrition. It was actually a groundbreaking small book. And I remember reporting on, I didn't pioneer the program, I reported on a program in the Bronx. I think it was in a VA hospital where they were curing, let us say, treating heroin addicts with massive doses of vitamin C by injection. They were injecting massive doses of vitamin C and getting people off heroin. That, of course, has been thrown out now because the drug companies never, ever wanted a natural treatment for anything. There's no money in it. Vitamin C is very cheap. As I say, it's like a one-step process from a cheap sugar to make vitamin C. Most of it's synthesized in Japan, incidentally. So, you know, there's no money in it, so therefore there's no validity to it, according to the AMA and the pharmaceutical business. But so you're talking about depression. Exercise, mild exercise, but continuous for a while, with a mega dose of vitamin C and a lot of B vitamins. And some people will say the fish oils. I have never seen an effect of fish oils on mood, ever. I've seen an effect of coenzyme Q on mood. I've seen it immediately. Coenzyme Q is an amazingly powerful substance. But, you know, you've got to be very careful with overdosing. As much as I believe in mega doses of vitamins, there is a limit in some areas, and I'm afraid people don't know the balance point, so I don't really want to get into nutrition right now. Sometimes I toy with going back into nutritional counseling on the telephone. I wouldn't want to see people in person, but then I say, what am I going to do that for? I got radio, it's enough. I think of setting up, you know, a number and you call in and all that. I know that I could make a business of it, but then I'm sitting alone in a room and I'm giving people advice by telephone. So it's not about the money. So therefore, if I want to see people in order to be integrated with humanity and be a little more socialized, I have to do it by seeing people, right? Then that's a whole different story already. Then you're practicing a form of pseudo-medicine, and you have to get around the law, and you say you're doing lifestyle. I don't even want to get into it. But I have so much knowledge that I can share with people. And knowledge, by the way, you won't believe what's dying in the world right now. Knowledge is dying on every level. Plain and simple facts of reality are being killed, either through neglect or on purpose. I'll give you an example. I met two people over the last 3 days who were suffering high blood pressure and their quack doctor treated them by giving them only pills, which reduced the blood pressure. And I said to both of them, they're both separate, two different conversations, I said, did your doctor tell you to avoid salt? And both of them looked at me in a puzzled manner and said, no. I said, how could they ignore the most obvious means of reducing high blood pressure, which is throw away the salt shaker? Both of them said, no, their doctor never told them that. Just take this pill. Now, either the doctors are ignoramuses because they didn't learn it themselves, or they're so sold into the drug culture that they don't even want you to know that you can modify your high blood pressure, in most cases, through diet and exercise, period, end of story. In most cases, you can do it through diet and exercise. Just throw away the salt shaker and start eating high potassium-rich foods. Bananas, potatoes, beets, things like that, okay? I don't want to go into the list. You think of a big watermelon. That's a potassium-rich fruit. And you say, well, what is that going to do? Well, it's sort of the opposite to the sodium. The high potassium will tend to neutralize the high sodium. And throw away the salt shaker, for God's sakes. How many people do you see in restaurants shaking that salt shaker? And the doctor says, don't worry about it, just take the pill. Same with cholesterol problems. They don't even tell them to eliminate the foods anymore. All they do is put them on the Lipitor, the muscle-killing, liver-killing substances that they're peddling. So, okay, I did the nutrition now. Now let's go back to normal programming here on the Savage Nation. The show's going too fast. It's not fun when it ends too fast. Sometimes I think I torment myself mentally in order to slow life down. Because I actually, it's an interesting concept. I thought about that a long time ago when I was very young, that life is actually easy, and that if you torment yourself enough, you slow your life down, you create an agony for yourself, so you think life is longer. That's kind of a weird thing. Isn't that an odd thought? It's like the Passion of Christ in a certain way. No, don't take that one the wrong way. I know that one's a deeply problematic statement for those of you who are going to immediately misinterpret what I just said. But, you know, life could be almost zen in its way of just let it all go, but then you're dead too fast.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Savage Nation, listener depression is advised. Welcome to the program. If you just tuned in, it's Friday, you know. I did already the news. How much can you take? How much can you take of what's going on in the world and in the country? It's on my website, the stories I think are important. Okay, michaelsavage.com. And buy my book while you're at it, Abuse of Power. Everyone asks me, they run into me, how's your book doing? I said, I told you every day on the show, it's 6 weeks on the New York Times list with only my show promoting it. I'm not allowed on Fox News. I'm banned on Fox News. And, of course, the midstream media wouldn't have me. So it's only my own audience. It's a miracle. You know, I have to be grateful for my audience, right? It's a miracle that you listen to the show and that you buy the books and stuff like that. It's a miracle when you consider it. Nancy Pelosi wrote a book. It sold 5,000 copies. Think about that one. Think about all of the politicians who are also high and mighty. They write these books. They get millions of dollars in advances because the publishers want some favor in return for the advance. That's how it's done. And no one buys their book. The true test of the audience is the sale of the books. And of course, again, I don't want to talk about me for much longer. I'm kind of bored of it by now, but the report that came out this week that Savage Superstar skyrockets and Rush flatlines and Wallbang hits his thing. Savage Internet Radio ratings rose 27% in October. I'm number two on the Internet. Now, why is that important? Because it means the younger audience is listening to me. That's what it means. The younger audience traditionally is not listening to radio, unfortunately. They're not. They're listening on iPods and on cell phones. I don't even know how they do it, frankly. I don't even know what it means, actually. I don't even know what Internet radio... I don't even know what it means. I knew doing them. You tune into a station and you get the show through a website of a station primarily. But Limbaugh went up flatlined. He's at 16.8, a rank of number one, but a share of 16.8. That you'd expect, right? Michael Savage is number two. Rank is number two with a share of 10.8. That's a 10.8 share. Which is awesome. Number three is Blackboard. Way down the list is Banger. Then the Coffer and the Hacker. The guy who absolutely hates my talent. We won't even mention his name is Levine. But he tried to... I said, he's evil, don't get me wrong. I don't know the man. It's just that he's talentless and all he does is scream. It's an amazing thing. I think even a car show would be better. If you listen to Midnight Trucking, you'd be better off than listening to half of the conservatives out there, but the same thing every day. Republican good. Why that? Democrat bad. Okay, what do you want to talk about on the Savage Nation? I need another piece of music to start again, because I got sidetracked talking about Michael Savage.
Dungaree doll, dungaree
right,
doll.
No, come on, no. I don't want to hear him again. Eddie Fisher. Didn't he just recently pass away? Yeah, poor... Married to. Leaving fascist America, Jesse Ventura off to Mexico. Who is Jesse Ventura? Why is he even deserving a headline on the Drudge Report? Who is this man? I don't even know who he is. He's some big moron. Why are we paying attention to some dope who no one listens to? Matt, come on. Change the headline. That's an absurd headline. No one cares. I don't care if he's leaving America. He never should have been in America to begin with. I will never stand for the national anthem again. I will turn my back and I will raise my fist. Judge tosses TSA case. This is like the Michael Jackson story, Matt. I'm sorry, this is not a good story to lead your site with. Your site lead should be Michael Savage, number two in internet radio. Savage soars, number two. There's so much corruption out there. How is Newt Gingrich still in this race? How is this possible? How could a retreaded white wall tire like this still be rolling? I don't get it. No one even wants a white wall tire anymore. You ever think about the tire analogy? It's pretty good. But Gingrich is very much like a jumbo white wall tire that's been retreaded, and they put like a fake side on it. I remember when I was poor and young and white walls were in fashion, and I couldn't afford new tires. What we would do is we'd go to an auto supply store and we buy fake white walls that attach to the outside of the rim of the tire. Instead of buying a tire, could you imagine? No one does a thing like this anymore because everyone wants new. Everyone throws everything out. I don't blame them. If you lived in Cuba, you wouldn't throw anything out either. Now you're living almost in a Cuba. Well, it's like Greece. It's almost like Portugal. I predicted when I first started in radio that we'd eventually wind up like Portugal, and I was roundly attacked by the San Jose Jerk Your Knee News. Oh, he said we'd be like Portugal. Fiscally, we're like Portugal. All right, let's take some callers. New York, Donna, welcome to the Savage Nation. What's on your mind?
Yes, hello, Michael. What I want to talk about is, what is your next book? Or perhaps I can make a suggestion. What is your next book after your next book? The first book I read after, from not reading for 20 years, was your Abuse of Power. And the reason why was because I felt like you were sitting next to me, reading it to me. I felt your presence, and it kept me there. You said something very interesting a couple of weeks ago. You were talking about the great talent of the little girl that's 10 years old and what a treasure she is for the Western culture.
Singer I heard. Yes, the singer I heard at the Trump casino, Trump, wherever it was.
Yes, and it occurred to me, like, yes, this kind of child is in danger of the Islamic threat. And what would happen if Jack Hatfield had to protect this child, that if through a strange course of events, she became a focus? Because the Islamic culture is so hateful to women and to everything that the Western culture is singing and so forth.
How can you say putting a woman in a burqa, performing a mutilation on her genitalia, and in the case of Saudi Arabia, prohibiting her from driving and doing other functions, is hateful towards women? You realize you're committing a hate crime. I mean, the president says that Islam is a religion of peace and there's no violence in it. I mean, you're violating the protocols of the Obama White House when you say that.
Yes. Well, Michael, I mean, they burn little girls with acid to destroy their beauty. And this is an unique...
Oh, that's the religious way. You don't want a beautiful woman. What you want is somebody you put into a burqa. That's what you want. But what does that have to do with the book Abuse of Power? I'm not following you exactly.
Well, instead of, like, it's a form of terrorism to destroy a child, a perfectly beautiful child.
Well, in Saudi Arabia, they recently beheaded a woman over there in a parking lot last week, didn't they? To show you what an advanced civilization the Saudis have. They cut her head off, and there wasn't one article about it in Politico. Instead, they published 90 articles about Herman Cain. Not one article in Politico about cutting off a woman's head in the Islamic world.
Right.
Yeah, no, I understand, but I'm trying to make another point. So you ask me a question, let me answer it. What is my next book? My next book is coming out in the spring from Harper. Those are the people who published Trickle Up Poverty. It's called Trickle Down Tyranny. Okay, Obama's attack on our borders, language, and culture. Does that ring true to you?
Yes, it does.
Okay. After that one, because that book was just sent to the publisher this week, I don't stop for a second. I'm already starting to put together the next Jack Hatfield sequel, and I'm trying to figure out pretty much, I pretty much know what's going to happen in it. But I'm not even going to give you a hint as to who the villains are. They're not the Islamists. It's not the Hand of Allah. You want to take a guess who they are? Who's going to be the villain? Which nation is going to be the villainous nation trying to hurt America in the sequel to Abuse of Power?
I would guess China.
I'm not saying. Let's put it to you this way. It's not Poland.
Right.
Well, did you enjoy reading Abuse of Power, Donna?
I have my copy, but I'll take another one and pass it on. It's up to you.
Because, no, I'm sending you another one. And the main thing you said is when you read it, you heard my voice.
Oh, yeah.
You could hear me reading it to you.
Sure.
It was like having a friend in bed with you.
Yeah.
I don't want to get too personal.
Not alone.
No, you're not alone. When you read my book, Abuse of Power, you're no longer alone. I can't read any more from it because if I give any more away, I can't read the sex scene because then all the women over 70 will rush out and buy it. And they'll lose their boyfriends, so I can't read that. Let's see, Paris. I didn't read anything from Paris yet. How about 30 seconds? Nah, I don't want to go to Paris. Do we like French again? I forgot there was a period we didn't like the French. Remember that? At first, Tony went along with the game, as he called it, by tying her up and telling her she was a dirty girl. No, I can't read that. Sorry. Not good. I don't know what to read here. I don't know which piece of the Abuse of Power to read. Jack thought of his apartment on Union Street as his fortress of solitude. I read that already on the air. Can anyone call me and ask me to read something to them on the air if you're lonely? Are you lonesome tonight? Elvis had that racket down with the, Miss Lonely Hearts. Remember that one? Does anyone know the book Miss Lonely Hearts? Who wrote it? Who wrote Miss Lonely Hearts? And who was it about? Do you remember it was a media figure? I remember what happens to Miss Lonely Hearts at the end of the book. I remember what period it was written in. All right, I'll be right back.
Savage. Are you lonesome tonight? Do you miss me tonight? Are you sorry we drifted apart?
Yeah, big deal. You can't get into it.
Does
anyone remember this guy anymore? I mean, it's not a big deal. It's all over. It's another age, isn't it? All of that stuff. I turn it. It's really maudlin. It's horrible. I mean, he was just shooting up. And got fat, looked like Mickey Rourke without, you know, face surgery. You ever see what Mickey, what did he do to himself, Mickey Rourke? Because some people should just age, you know what I mean? And just, like, walk on already. Especially the women, it's terrible what happens to them. I don't want to be misogynist about it at all, and I'm not. I am a woman. I mean, I wasn't born in a test tube, despite what you may think. I was not made in Brave New World. But the fact is, at a certain point, these singers and actresses just have to be, just disappear. They should leave. I mean, what they all become, as I said to you, I told you once, in not so joking a fashion, like Goldie Hawn, a very well-known nympho, a sexually active woman. Her own husband said that couldn't control her everywhere she turned. She was with another Frenchman, foreigner, you know, and she would talk about herself in the third person, what Goldie wants, Goldie does. Stunningly beautiful when she was young. And as they get older and their hindquarters start, you know, just time and gravity does it to everybody one way or the other. As the hindquarters start to drop, the LQ goes up, the liberal quotient goes up. So I put together a quotient. The higher the GQ, the gluteus quotient, well, I should say the lower the higher the LQ. And it's true. Look at the other one just 2 weeks ago. The one who played a giant, what was that one? I forget. She came out against oil drilling in an oil pipeline. It was laughable. Who tells these girls that anyone's going to listen to them? Why do they even bother? They reinvent themselves as environmental radicals. I mean, no one listened to them to begin with. They're only looking at their TNA. That's all they ever looked at. Now they're going to come out. They're great and savers of the environment. They just walk on, you know. But it's the same true. The same thing is true for guys. I don't want to get overly excited about it all. That's why on MichaelSavage.com I found a very cute filler article on the bottom about five actors who haven't aged well. And the picture I put up there of Val Kilmer is astonishing. This guy looks like he's been living on, you know, the 1950s cop diet. I mean, just like, it looks like beer, soda, and donuts. I don't know what happened to this guy. But if you look at what they did to Madonna, I mean, what's happened to that woman? Look at Mickey Rourke, what happened to him, like Frankenstein from all of the surgery. But the guy who wrote this is amazingly funny. Five actors who haven't aged well. Years haven't been kind to these celebs. Author Robert Elsenpeter. He's really sarcastic. So he talks about Madonna. I'll go back to politics in a minute. And it says, Madonna has spent so much time committed to being lean and trim that she's gotten downright sinewy. In fact, if she was ever adrift in a lifeboat or crashed in the Andes, she'd be the last person the survivors ate. She just looks too chewy. I was laughing looking at this, but I don't know how anybody would find that attractive. She looks like a victim of some kind of starvation program. Horrible. There's another example when they don't have any concept of reality anymore. I guess what I'm going to do is make a political point. Celebrities and politicians are out of touch with reality, which is why we don't like them. We know that they don't understand reality at all. They're insulated. They have yes men around them or yes women. And they have no idea when they become talentless or ugly, or when they become naked, bald-faced liars and the people are laughing at them behind their back. So that basically explains everything you ever had to know about everything. Stephen in Santa Maria, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Thank you, Dr. Savage. I appreciate you taking my call.
Thank you. What's up?
I just wanted to say you were talking earlier about how young people don't listen to you on the radio. And if I don't get the chance to hear you on the radio when I'm out working, I have you on my iPhone, and I get to listen to you no matter where I am. I appreciate that.
How do you listen to this show on an iPhone? What do you tune in to find me? How does that work?
I have an iPhone app that can actually access any radio station streaming over the Internet all across the nation. So I actually,
in your iPhone, there's an app that you can access any radio station, and where I am streamed, you pick up the show.
Exactly, and there's ranges from the East Coast to West Coast, anywhere that you're on the air.
Well, I have a friend who listens to my show everywhere in the world. No matter where he is, he turns it on. 5 a.m, 6 a.m, 1 a.m, because it's always on somewhere, right, depending upon the time zone. What age bracket are you in, Stephen?
I'm 28, or I'll be 28 this month.
So why do you listen to me?
Oh, my God, why don't I listen to you?
You got a free copy of Abuse of Power. I guess I'm the missing link in so many people's lives.
Savage.
Savage Nation, yeah. Wish I had asked that young man why he listens to the show, and he said, why don't I listen to the show? That was a great answer. So if you care to call the show, it's Open Mic to Mike Friday, 1-800-449-8255. GWAR guitarist found dead. What's GWAR? What is that? Some group I should know about? You'd expect, oh, a junkie guitarist was found dead. How shocking. Dead on a band tour bus. Gee, I wonder why. I guess he was drinking too much iced tea or something. Must have been a hot day. Who knows? Band bus. What do you think they do on a band bus? I mean, what do you think they die from? I'm supposed to cry over this now. People use drugs day and night, abuse their bodies, and they die, and I'm supposed to give a darn. Whatever. New York, WOR, Dallas, welcome to the program.
Dr. Savage?
Yes.
I was sitting on the beach this summer reading your book, Trickle of Poverty, and I started to cry. So
why?
My husband looked at me and said, what are you crying for? So I'm reading here that Dr. Michael Savage, he was 11 years old, and he had his first saving account.
Yeah.
I came to this country. I was 34 years old. I used to work in a medical college in Cuba.
Hmm.
And I came here with a debt of $1,000 in order to come.
Mm-hmm.
My relatives lent me the money to come here to be free.
Mm-hmm.
So I started to cry. I said, how can it be? And then you said in your book that that was the day that I knew what capitalism was.
When I earned interest, I learned what capitalism was.
Yes. So I knew it the first time I got here in this country. I started to work in a store with a master's degree already.
Right.
And my first check, I still saved the stuff from my first paycheck that I got in this country, because it was for the first time in my whole life that the money I was working for had some value. I could buy
well rent. because in Cuba the Fidel brothers own everything, right?
Exactly. So I worked in the medical college because
can you explain something to me? How can the world stand idly by when the entire Cuban population is in prison? They run a prison island. It's like Devil's Island, Cuba.
Listen to me. I have so many things to write about. I want to write a book about all my experiences in Cuba since I was a little girl. So I said I used to live in a huge prison. Cuba is not a beautiful island. It's a huge prison. That's what it was to me all my life.
You know, but listen, you know more about it than I do, but I was reading about finally the other brother, Raul, said they can start to sell property. I said, really, very nice of you. After the state stole the property from everybody, nobody even knows who owns it.
So I was sitting and during my lunch time, I'm an educator, and every day in the class when I teach today in history, because they don't know what happened in this country, they don't know why this country is the best country in the world and why we're free. And I was listening to WOR, and I heard the news. It said, for the first time, people are able, they can sell and buy houses. I said, well, I guess at least someone is going to believe me, everything I've been saying since I came here, that you couldn't buy or rent a house in Cuba. That was
isn't it true when the Castro gang took over Cuba?
Huh.
Slowly they took away the freedoms. It wasn't overnight. It was very slow.
Well,
and then eventually the thugs from the Castro police came and kicked in the doors, pounded on the door and told women and their husbands, get out of the house. Fidel now owns it. Is that not true?
It's true. And I was born in 63, and fortunately we were living in the house that belonged to my grandparents. They lost part of their farm in Cuba, too. I'm from the Guantanamo area, Guantanamo Bay, and I was so lucky that I could listen to the radio station, to the American radio station.
Coming out of Miami.
Listen, you are not allowing Cuba to listen to Guantanamo Bay. I say, in my house.
But how does the world stand idly by talking about liberating people in Libya, liberating people in Tunisia, and we look the other way when we have a prison camp 80 miles from our shore? How does that happen?
I don't understand. I said that's the first place that they should go and try to liberate Cuba. But you know what happens? When people in Cuba, that they receive, they are used to getting things, little things. A rice cooker, things that you would laugh.
You know, my lead story, Adalas, on my website is exactly that about the Cuba. I was shocked to learn today that 80% of the people in the workforce work for the Castro regime. They're government employees. They have free housing, free medical care, free transportation, subsidized food. It's everything that the socialists in America are demanding. The problem is they earn $20 a month because nothing is free. And that's exactly the problem with these morons in the parks of America demanding free this and free that. But I'm going to send you a free copy of Not Trickle Up Poverty, although it's out in paperback. Abuse of Power. Stay on the line. This is the Savage Nation. Let's go to the callers. We have some amazing callers. Someone wants a Thanksgiving story. It's almost ready. Very, very close to ready. I've been thinking about a turkey now. Okay, let's go to Warsaw, Wisconsin. Carrie, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Dr. Savage.
Hi.
Tonight, I just wanted to get one of your old-time stories for Thanksgiving.
It is a little early, although my mind is now turning to where I will be for Thanksgiving. One of the children has invited us for dinner. The other child has told me, I don't know where we're going to be. So, I don't know where I'm going to be. I may be here. I may be there. But I always cook a turkey, whether I go to their house or someone else's anyway. I love cooking a turkey on Thanksgiving Day, even if I'm not going to, be here to eat it. I eat it the next day and all. Just the smell of it in the house all day is beautiful, isn't it?
Yes. It's my favorite holiday.
Well, it is my favorite, too. It's kind of stripped of any negativity, except I guess, to the even Thanksgiving's been usurped by the radical left. That's right. I'm sorry. The poor Native American and the poor turkey and the poor potato and the poor the porridge was poor and the green bean really wanted to live and the pilgrim was evil and the Indian was noble. Yeah, I forgot about all of that.
I say it's a time for gluttony.
I agree with you, and I'm going to send you a gift for Thanksgiving entitled what? What are you getting?
Oh, let's see. I don't know. That's a tough one.
Sorry. If you don't know, you don't get it. You have to name it to gain it. What else is in the news here? Let's go to New York. Don on WOR. Go ahead, please. You're on the Savage Nation.
Dr. Savage.
Yes, sir.
I'm approximately your age, so everything...
You're 49?
I was born in 43.
No, I'm saying you're my age. You're 49 years old. So what's on your mind?
Do you remember Senator Goldwater when he was running up against Lyndon Baines Johnson?
I certainly do. Extremism and the defense of liberty is no vice. He's my favorite.
Absolutely. And I was in the service at that time. I just got out, and I saw on TV what they did to him with the little girl by the pond and the nuclear explosion.
Oh, yeah, and I know the man who devised that campaign. He was a Washington, D.C. Democrat lawyer who made up the entire campaign. I know exactly who smeared Goldwater with that nuclear bomb with the flower thing.
That cost him the election.
Yes.
Yep.
Yes, I do know that. Well, they're doing it to Kane, obviously, because...
Absolutely.
Kane is an independent. He's a threat to the Republican and Democrat machines both, so they're both out to get him.
Yep. And when I got out of college, and I feel that I'm still in college listening to you because you're like my professor... I have learned so much from your program.
That's very nice. I try to take the gift that I've been given with the microphone. I remember it as a gift every day, incidentally. And I say to myself, look, you could goof around a little bit, but fundamentally you have a great obligation, I tell myself every day, to try to make it worthwhile to the listeners. I mean, let's not forget what this is. This is a great gift. It's a great gift of freedom, primarily. You realize how rare this is? That a man could get on a radio microphone, rather, and speak to over 300 stations across America is awesome, number one. But then to speak to millions of people each week, expressing his feelings and fears and hopes and dreams and intuitions and this and that, it's a miracle to me when you think about it. In light of the oppression, in light of the despots on the face of the planet, and in light of all the men who died, that I may have this freedom, it's a tremendous gift and a tremendous responsibility. And don't think I don't know it. I do. I remember it every day.
That's why so many people have called you a prophet. And that's why you are suffering in England, because all prophets had to suffer. Ezekiel, Isaiah, Jesus, they all suffered because they spoke the truth. And the truth scares people.
Absolutely. Well, I think that's why Cain is being attacked. Because he speaks truth to power, to use a Pat Fraze, and the power structure fears him. They hate him. I mean, he's just liable to do everything that the American people want. He's just liable to shrink government. Can you imagine what would happen then?
My goodness.
Yeah, can you imagine that? All right, look, I'm going to send you a copy of Abuse of Power since you're so nice. Las Vegas, Gary, welcome to the Savage Nation. What's on your mind, Gary?
I want to tell you that I just love your show. I've been listening for years, and if I'm having a bad day, I turn you on, and you just get me right back to center. And
why? Even when I when I say listener depression advised, you find that funny?
It's true, and I feel like I'm in San Francisco with you when you're telling stories about how you get off of work and you're walking down San Francisco looking for something to eat. It's like you feel like you're right there.
Oh, yeah, yeah, no, it's true, but it's exactly what I really do. I mean, the weather turned the other day. Thank God it's going to be dark soon earlier. Oh, I can't wait for the clock to be set back. This is my favorite day of the year, which is fall back, not spring forward. Spring forward frightens me, these long days. I don't know what to do with myself.
Yeah, your show is like church to me.
So what part of the show do you like the best?
The stories. When you really boil all of it down, the stories. And,
all right, so you like the lifestyle stories rather than the politics.
You're kind of like a favorite uncle that tells stories, and you always remember the stories, and I think that's what, you know.
Well, that's fine. I know that's a big part of the show, and I'm going to send you my book of my Abuse of Power storybook because it's a great book, and I want everyone to read it. Here's a great caller out of Green Bay, Wisconsin, and I'm dying to answer, by the way. Jason, welcome to the program. Go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, great to talk to you. I was wondering,
thank you.
I have a comment and a question. The question is, with all your astute observations about politics, did you ever think of running for political office?
The question is why I will not run for office. The answer is, look what they're doing to Herman Cain. In other words, the vermin in the media are so awful. They're so not journalists. They're such evil people. Look what they're doing to a decent man like him. I'm not saying that you should hero worship him or put him on a pedestal or love him, but to bring up these fallacious charges from these women from 12 years ago, I can tell you just by the size of the settlements, they were nuisance suits. I'll tell you right off the bat. $35,000, you know what that is? That's a vicious woman who wanted to collect a paycheck by saying he looked at my hair or he said I was cute. And she figured she needed an early, you know, retirement. So she got some low-life lawyer who threatened the restaurant association, and they bought her out. That's number one. He didn't really, you know, hurt anybody. So aside from that, the answer is because I don't want to go through the hell of being ripped to shreds by the vermin in the media. That's number one. Number two, I don't have the nature to be in politics. Because I can't be nice to people when I don't feel it. When I'm not in the mood to be nice, I can't smile, I can't shake hands, I can't kiss babies. I don't like going on airplanes and traveling. It's just not for me. And number three, I think I have a bigger impact with my radio show and my books than I would as a politician, frankly. Look, take a look at what happens when you become a senator. Let's take the wild card, never mind Congress, you know, congressman. Look at what a senator can actually achieve as one of 100, a junior senator, nothing. Remember that fat slob comedian in your area? Remember when he first came out, he thought it was all a joke, and he started to still cavort like he was on Saturday Night Live, and when they shut him up? You haven't heard from him, have you? What's his name? Who's the guy? Al whatever his name is. I don't even remember his name. He's a U.S. senator. Why has he suddenly been silenced? Because the Democrats told him to shut his mouth, dummy up, get in line, or they would starve his state of money and he'd never be reelected again. They told him to shut up because he was not a good party player, and they did not want him hamming it up in the Senate because it wasn't good for the Democrats to actually show the face of evil. You know what I'm saying? So, in other words, even if I became a senator, so what? What would I gain by it? And what effect could I really have?
That was Al Franken. I think you would affect politics for the better because we need a straight shooter in there, not someone who tells the public what they want to hear.
So, well, I understand, but what I'm saying is something quite different. You can tell the public what the truth is all you want, but go try to get policy change. It's almost impossible. Unless you play ball, even within your own party, by trading favors, it's a horse trade. It's how it works. They'll come to you and say, look, Mike, you want, let us say, more money for veterans, or you want less money for community organizers in your state. I'll tell you what, we'll do that if you vote on this with us. It's a horse trade. So what if they tell you to vote on something you don't believe in? Well, right away, you've compromised. So it's all about compromise. And therefore, within a very short period of time, it's Mr. Smith goes to Washington, and you've compromised sufficiently that you are compromised, and therefore your values start to get watered down, and before long, you're just another one of the hordes from Washington. So therefore, it's better off staying in the media if this is what you do better, and this is what I do better.
I got a quick joke for you. I'd like to give you a chuckle. I was
unfortunately, I'm frankly out of time. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Right to the callers, New York calls, WOR. Andrew, fire away. Go ahead, please. What's on your mind?
Hello, Dr. Savage. I just thought it was great that the great John Corzine steps down from his position after stealing people's money, $600 million.
How in the world can this man who ran MF Global declare bankruptcy and say there's $1 billion missing in customer money and not be immediately arrested? How is this possible?
Well, here's the thing.
We had a couple in Honolulu last week that accidentally didn't pay for two sandwiches worth $5, and Safeway had them arrested and their child taken away from them. John Corzine says, I don't know where $1 billion went, and he's walking around smiling with the other Democrats. It's astounding. Wait, it gets worse. You don't know this. Take a guess who's going to investigate him. Gary Gensler. Don't worry. Gary Gensler's going to investigate him. Not the SEC. There is no SEC. Gary Gensler is head of the Commodity Futures Trading Commission, and he's going to lead the inquiry into how hundreds of millions vanished last week from client accounts at Corzine's MF Global. Well, that sounds good, doesn't it? So who is Gary Gensler? Well, he worked for Corzine as they rose through the ranks of Goldman Sachs. Gary Gensler worked directly for the man he's supposed to investigate. And later they collaborated on Capitol Hill to pass an anti-corporate fraud law. So I'm asking you, you ask yourself what kind of country you're living in when there is no longer a Security and Exchange Commission, there's no longer a government on to investigate any kind of wrongdoing on Wall Street, and here's $1 billion missing, and the guy is not immediately arrested and investigated. How is this possible? It was said last when it was announced that they mixed investors' money with the corporate money. That's a federal violation. It's jail time. It's an immediate jail term. How do they get away with it? Why? They. Who's they? They are the government. There is no government. It's government anarchy. It's a government of the lobbyists, by the lobbyists, for the lobbyists. It's astounding. Everything that happened that brought Obama to power that I pointed out in Trickle Up Poverty, the rigging of the system, the busting out of the system under Bush in order to bring in this unknown man, this incompetent president that we have, is happening all over again. Nothing has changed. There's no investigative arm of the U.S. government that is even functional. Where's the SEC? I mean, this is rightly an investigation for the Securities and Exchange Commission, is it not? No. Why? Because they're not part of the securities or exchanges. Security exchanges, they're part of the Commodity Futures Trading Commission, which they run. So who's going to investigate him? A guy that used to work for him, Gary Gensler. You hear? And this is a country you're supposed to have faith in? The criminal investigation of the missing $600 million. In one paragraph, it's $600 million is missing in Corzine's firm. The former governor of New Jersey. The former CEO of Goldman Sachs. Then it's $600 million is missing. Oh, what's the difference between $600 million and $1 billion? We don't really know. But again, I want to remind you what kind of country you're living in. A young couple, the woman was pregnant. They paid for $50 worth of groceries and forgot to pay for two sandwiches in Safeway in Honolulu. And they arrested them. They took away their child. They put them in jail because they didn't pay for two sandwiches for $5. They forgot to pay for it. You hear this? And this guy says he doesn't know where $1 billion is? And you wonder why there's upheaval in this country, why there's unrest? Oh, yeah, I'd like to see some unrest, but not in the parks of zucchini.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Well, here are some of the news stories that I think you really should pay attention to. You know, Obama's building up the federal government at an alarming rate. And most of the jerks in the parks, the Occupy movements, want a federal, state, or local job. What they don't understand is it will lead us to a state like Cuba. Take a guess what percent of the Cuban population works for Fidel, the federal government. 50%? 60%? You're wrong. You see, they get free education, free health care, free housing, free food even in Cuba. Everything that the left wing has been demanding in America. Free education, free health care, free housing, free food. And guess what? 80% of them work for Fidel Castro. Oh, there's one caveat. They earn $20 a month. So you see, there's no such thing as free education, free health care, free housing, free food. If you'd like to live in Cuba, call Michael Savage and I'll send you a one-way ticket. Egypt's military wants no civilian oversight. Soros' connection to Occupy violence spelled out in an article from WorldNet Daily, which I put on michaelsavage.com. That's right. Superstar Savage skyrockets. Rush flatlines. My internet radio ratings rose 27% in October. Thank you, Mike. Good going. Here are some Bay Area San Francisco firms among the 30 not paying any federal taxes. They include Wells Fargo. No federal taxes. Job growth slows to a trickle from the Nicorette Chewer, the Nicorette Chewer-in-Chief. Support for Kane has risen, and since they've attacked him, he's raised over $1 million, so keep on going. Nancy Pelosi grilled about her investments, and she says to the reporter, I don't know what your point is of your question. No, you don't know. Kane attacked by IRS while fighting stage 4 cancer. Kane is the great black hope, says Michael Savage. It's all on michaelsavage.com. What else is on the Savage Nation website? Savage reads from Abuse of Power, which, by the way, it's a great novel and a lot of fun to read. You can get a free chapter by going to michaelsavage.com and just downloading it. You'll be hooked. Florida Muslims forced to hide the slaughter of lambs and goats. They cut their throats and gloat over it for some ancient festival. Where are all the animal rights activists? Deranged homeless man goes on a violent rampage in Zucchini Park, whatever. Why aren't they all deranged? Finally, on my website, there's a pretty picture of a dog sleeping upside down on a bed with his stomach up in the air. And the question from this veteran site is why does my dog sleep belly up? My dog sleeps like that. That's because he's secure and well-socialized, unlike you, who probably sleep on the sheets with your belly down. Politico publishes 90 Kane stories in 5 days.
Jesus.
You think that they're working against Kane? I do. Ben Bradley of the Washington Post says, I think he's got it coming to him, doesn't he? Now, that's a white liberal. What did I tell you about them? Unbelievable to me what's going on in this country. What else is in the news?
Bradley was the one who took down Nixon, right? He's the one with the Washington Post.
An old drunk. Israeli Navy boards Gaza-bound boats. I guess they're going to have some pita bread with the Palestinians and the Turks. Romney slams Perry. Perry slams Romney. Romney slams Corzine. Corzine slams Romney. Romney slams Atlanta. Atlanta slams Chicago. What did they say? Under ethics cloud, Congresswoman charges racism. Oh, the old tried and true ethics committee to investigate Representative Richardson, Democrat, by the way. And she said she's been singled out because she's African-American. Richardson, a Democrat socialist from California, said that it's all because she's black. Even though the ranking Democrat is a Hispanic, and even though the other members of the committee are black, Hispanic, Puerto Rican, it's all done because she's black. It's an old game. It worked so far for her. Why not continue, you know? If it works for you now, why not keep working it? You know, work the system. Here are some of the other headlines on MichaelSavage.com. The accuser of Herman Cain sees no value in revisiting the case. Really? I wonder why she sees no value in it. And Fatso Moore, the biggest fat liar on the planet, has a $50 million fortune. And he's been confronted by people who are screaming at him, "Stop lying, you fat slob." He was leaving the Occupy Denver protest to go peddle a book. And he was confronted by a correspondent at KCNC-TV. The reporter asked if his rumored wealth made him part of the 1% the Occupy movement was protesting against. "I do very well," said Fatso. "Because I do well, I want taxes raised on people who do well, including mine." But when asked how he is helping the protesters with his $50 million, Moore said, "I don't have $50 million," before growing exasperated and telling the reporter, "You're just punk media is all you are. You lie. You lie to people. Stop lying to people. Stop lying." When asked again, "Are you not part of the 1%? Fatso replied, "Just don't lie, okay?" How do you like that? That's what you get. Palin apparently has surfaced from beneath the mucklucks. I didn't even know she was still around. I thought she was still mushing up in Alaska. But apparently she's chimed in on the Occupy movement. I don't know where she's been all these months now.
On Huskies.
Feds are worrying that hackers could open prison doors with computers from a distance. Can you believe this? How do you like that one? Huh? U.S. approaches $15 trillion debt limit. And what else is in the news? Well, there's so much more in the news, but there's no point in giving it all to you. Here's one last story. Occupy Atlanta denies rumors of partnership with the Nation of Islam. I knew this day would come. I knew this day would come. Tomorrow, the park will turn into a battlefield as Occupy Atlanta protesters hit the streets again. But apparently they've enlisted the help of the Nation of Islam. Shall I say the controversial Nation of Islam? What do you think about the collaboration from within the communist Occupy movement and the Nation of Islam? I think it's a natural fit, don't you? Please wait while loading this widget. If no content appears within 15 seconds, tune in to Michael Savage. I'll be right back.
Savage.
President and working with us deliberately put pieces in the jobs bill that they had always supported. Maybe they want the economy to be as bad as possible because they think that's their best road to electoral victory. You don't want to come to that conclusion, but their actions sort of draw you in that direction. If they would come to us and say, "Here's how we can vote for it," we'd work with them. 59% of Republicans agree that those folks should pay
right.
an increase in taxes. 80% of Democrats, 70% of independents. So they say, well, that's their objection.
Did you hear that? And it's organizations like the AARP who control these leftist politicians. AMAC is fighting back. The Association of Mature American Citizens. Your membership can help stop the left wing. Call 800-255-4199, 800-255-4199, or go to AmericaIsRising.com, 800-255-4199, AmericaIsRising.com. I've been talking about a lot of different things. I mean, the sandwiches. How could you arrest parents? Let's say they even stole the sandwich, for argument's sake. Let's take, again, it's like the Herman Cain thing. Let's say he did say to one of the women, "You're cute. Man, you're good looking." So what? So what? What world do you live in? That's the biggest crime of the century? How about the crimes Obama has committed every day and no one's talking about it? To throw mud in your eye, you idiots, you. So the couple goes and they buy $50 worth of goods and they pay for it and they forget to pay for two sandwiches. And they call the cops at Safeway, the dumb security guard. Maybe he had no choice. Maybe that's Safeway's policy. No matter what you shoplift, maybe they were tired of being ripped off. Shouldn't there be some discernment somewhere? Somewhere along the way, they say, look, two sandwiches. Okay, they meant to pay for it. They didn't. They did pay for $50 worth of groceries. They took their child away. But I don't want to talk about it. What are you going to say? That I'm right, I'm wrong, you agree with me, it's outrageous. It's pointless. Let's talk instead about the sex cells. And so we know that the bums in the parks of America with the Occupy movements are basically there for the drugs and the sex, and they have nothing to do with their lives. They're unemployable, and they're unemployed because they're unemployable. They're unemployable because of their attitudes and their lack of training. They have nothing that they have anyone needs. They have no product or service that anybody in the world wants. It has nothing to do with corporate America. It has to do with the fact that they went to school and studied something no one needs, or they never went to school. That's all. So now they're rutting in the tents like mink in heat, and now they're all testing for AIDS, HIV, other STDs before they go home to mommy with the sniffles. But they should have learned, as what my mother said, sex is dirty, especially if you're laying in a tent with a stranger. What do you expect to happen? What do you expect is going to come out of it? Something good? And so years ago, Beowulf, what is the date of that call, of my mother's call? Do you have a date on it? I wish we did. 2003. So my mother was about 85 at the time. She passed a few years after that, and I called her at her the facility in Florida. I'll never forget as long as I lived. And she set me up, you know. She really was smart, and she had a sense of timing that was astounding. And she caught me, the wise guy talk show host, off guard. Listen to this cut from Mama Savage and Michael on the No Sex. Listen.
What do you think is the secret to longevity?
What's the secret?
Yeah. Because you're an elder. You're 83.
Yeah, my case, what it is, I think.
What?
No sex.
No sex. Well, that in San Francisco is a sin, what you just said, because these people believe that the more is better.
All right, let's stop right there. It's very funny. she set me up. She set me up. She had a sense of timing. She always had. She should have been in show business, my mother, but she was burdened with life's problems. She didn't have a chance. So here I am. Here I am. No sex. But they don't believe that today. They think that more sex is better. You know, if it feels good, do it. Why not do it in the road? And look what we have as a result. Look what we have as a result. There's a lot to be said for sexual repression. There's almost that's almost like sacrilege to say that you should suppress sexuality. It's almost pornographic what I just said to you, that you should suppress sexuality in an over-sexualized society. All of Western civilization was created because of repressed sexuality. I've read that too. It's actually a very good theory. You take that energy and you harness that energy and you do something with it other than rut like a mink at a dirty tent. You write something, you paint something, you come up with something, you create something, you build a business, you raise a child. That's what you do with the energy. You don't have to, you know, run around day and night looking for sexual outlets like the vermin in Hollywood tell you do. They're so happy. Take a look at them. That's why they're in and out of rehab. They're doing so well, that's why they're in and out of rehab. Play some music. How about if I were a rich man? I wanted to hear immediately in the back of my head. I don't know why. I don't know why I wanted to hear Fiddler on the Roof. This song could be dedicated to some of Obama's supporters, but that wouldn't work, truthfully. If I said that, it'd be misconstrued.
All day long I'd biddy biddy bum. If I were a wealthy man, I wouldn't have to
work. What's this with Greece? Why is Greece now the linchpin of this collapse of the world? Well, you know, it's an interesting, metaphorically, it's a very interesting concept that Western civilization is based upon the thinkers, the Greek, you know, the Greek logicians were philosophers of thousands of years ago. It's very fitting that all of the West should collapse based upon the Greek laziness of today. Why are they, is it lazy or is it the socialist government? There was a time Greeks worked. It's not always been like this. Homeland to monitor. Oh, whatever. Greek leak. What is this now? Greek voice. What is this? What is it? Military chiefs replying. Again, it's the movie Z by Kazantzakis. Kazantzakis didn't do Z, sorry. Kazantzakis wrote some other great books. I forget who did the movie Z. I love that movie. It was a leftist movie about the right-wing takeover in Greece. We should only have a right-wing takeover. Maybe they go to work again.
cut off the social services and make them work for a living. Now, this is what happens. You see, this is interesting. Greece is to Europe what the bums in Zucchini Park are to America, or to the middle class. The bums in the parks of America who are screaming corporate this and bail me out, they want you, the middle class, to support them, even though they don't provide anything anyone needs. In other words, they're bums. Greece is the Occupy movement of Europe. All they do is sit around smoking and complaining and polluting the atmosphere and destroying the Parthenon with fumes. It's sad. I mean, it's a beautiful civilization, but its time has come. I mean, it's like Portugal was once a world power. Where are they today? The rich live behind 40-foot walls in outside of Lisbon. That's where America's going. I saw this coming 15 years ago. I told my family, eventually the middle class here is going to have to be like in Brazil, living behind gates with armed guards. Guys with, like, shotguns walking around to protect your property. That's coming here. What is a unique? America's unique in that regard. Its uniqueness is over. Take a look who the president is. A communist radical took over the government. What do you expect? He's like Chavez. He's like the guy from Bolivia. There's no difference. Same exact mentality. They're all his buddies. They think the same way, same wavelength. And the cronyism. The cronyism is shocking. You talk about corruption. So now Greece is the linchpin all of a sudden. What happens if the you see, the Europeans were never permitted to vote on whether they should be members of the EU because the sentiment in Europe is against joining this new communist empire called the EU. The EU is new communism in plain English. It's a soft form of communism, albeit it's not a Soviet-style communism. Make no mistake about it. It's a market-based socialism, but it's a new communism. That's what the EU is. It's a giant welfare state. So you take a productive nation like Germany, where the people are still have a work ethic, and they're being told, you have to support the bums of Greece who have no desire to work. Why should they do that? Why should they bail out Greece? Why shouldn't Greece be allowed to fall and have runaway inflation until eventually they pick themselves up by their own souvlaki? I don't understand this.
Savage.
You've seen the street communists in Zucchini Park who not only want to take your money and get something for nothing, but they're riddled with STDs. And, of course, they want to destroy the American family as well. As I've told you, this is a core of Marxism. The American family is the target. Some people are trying to hold it together. Joining us now is Ron Francell. He's worked for the Denver Post and the Chicago Sun-Times, done war reporting in Iraq, and he's written about the real America and the real American family that the media refuses to show you. Ron, thanks for being on the Savage Nation.
Thank you, Michael. It's a pleasure to be with you.
What do you mean by the term accidental bastards? Sounds like it would fit the protesters pretty well.
Well, I don't know about the protesters, but there are very likely some everywhere we look. You know, we all have these gray areas in our relationships with our children and our parents, and in the Sourtoe Cocktail Club, I use the phrase accidental bastards to describe these lost sons who have drifted from their fathers, who were maybe lost sons themselves. So I come from a long line of them. I go back at least five generations to a great-grandfather who farmed out his five kids right at the moment when they needed him the most, right after their mom died in the great flu pandemic in 1918. His son, my grandfather, eventually did the same thing for different reasons, and my own biological father disappeared while my mom was pregnant with me. So when my 20-year marriage fell apart, here I was doing it too. I left my 13-year-old son behind in all that wake turbulence of divorce, and it kind of scared me to death how history had repeated itself for me. So the book is partly the story of my attempt to disrupt that sort of perverse, unnatural rhythm. Of course, it didn't really start off that high-minded. It starts in this disoriented darkness of divorce. You know, and while I spent a lot of time with my son after the split, it wasn't every single day. So when we did get together, I wanted to put that time to its maximum use. And it was really during one of those moments when I mentioned to him that I'd come across a story about this bar in the Yukon where they serve a drink that contains a mummified human toe. You know, he's 13 years old, so he's sort of doubly captivated by anything that might involve booze and a body part. And we just agreed that it would be a cool thing to do someday. And that's how we left it. It was just a curious story, and the toe was kind of our little code word about our future, something that we were going to do together. So it was about 6 years later when he was driving to college for the very first time, he mentioned to me that he'd been thinking about the toe. And, you know, I knew, and maybe because I knew his life was changing at that moment, it sounded like a good thing to do, and it was at that point that I knew we would do it. So I began to think, you know, how we were going to do this. I, you know, I worried about whether I was relevant to him, and here he was becoming a man in his own right, and this all swirled together, and the idea of pursuing this dead toe took on this greater meaning. So so that's how it all begins. We embark on this month-long odyssey to the very edge of the earth, and along the way, we learn unexpected things about ourselves, and we often saw that we were trading roles along the way. And, of course, at the end, something completely astonishing happens that neither of us saw coming.
Okay. We know how the media has been twisting young people today, and we know the results. Give us your take on it.
Well, the mass media often foster these unrealistic expectations about relationships between fathers and sons. You know, they're either perfect or they're irreparable, and there's not a doggone thing we can do to affect a change. The Sour Toe Cocktail Club, I think, was showing how wrong that concept is, and that a deeper connection is always possible. You're a father and a son, so you know what I mean. You know, my son and I always shared a lot of things, a love of history, a fascination with mythology, a provocateur's sensibility, even a sort of unreasonable expectation of romance. But we were miles apart on a lot of ordinary things like music and books and movies, even on death and how we want to be remembered. And that's where a lot of the book's funniest and most poignant moments come. At one point on that road, I took a header. I asked him to explain his beloved heavy metal music to me and for him to share some of his favorite songs. And, you know, I now imagine that I was probably as exasperated as my own mother must have been when I started playing the Rolling Stones so many years ago. But I was drawn into some of his music. And maybe more importantly, it was in all of our haggling about this heavy metal and about his splatter movies and even what the best superpowers might be. I got a glimpse inside my own son that I might not have had otherwise. And all it really took was stepping out of time and being willing to listen for this brief moment that now I know will last forever in my own mind. There's another moment while we're driving, and the history lover in me was holding forth and prattling on about Custer's Last Stand. And we're actually on the way toward the Little Bighorn at that time. And this was a marvelous story. You know, I threw in everything I possibly could know about Custer. And at the precise moment when we were passing this place where Custer died for our sins, my son grumbles, "Great, a park for killing Indians." You know, I was struck by that. But maybe that's the trick. It's sort of being willing to share your passions, no matter how they're going to be received.
So when you try to accomplish this with your own son, what did you actually find out?
Well, there are a lot of things. I think we needn't repeat the sins of our fathers. I think I learned that you know, every day of our lives, we take these little risks that might make the next day a better one. You know, sometimes it takes extraordinary courage to come out on the other side of a great sadness and to accept your own flaws and to find love and to embrace it when you do. So after a lot of the things that we experienced on the road, putting a dead toe in your mouth is pretty easy. It's a lot of deeper, darker things that you encounter on any journey. Than the destination sometimes. So, I wanted to take this journey as an effort to bridge a gap by creating memories. I wanted to show my son in a very concrete way that I loved him more than I could ever explain to him. And before time runs out, I wanted to give him probably the most precious thing I could offer, and that's time itself.
As a father, what do you think people need to do to avoid the trap that the left has set for them with their children?
I absolutely recommend turning off the iPods and the cell phones and the big screen TVs and the PCs and the DVDs and all these other distractions and spend 1 month of your life with your child or with your parent. You know, that month is likely to be a little bit like life. You know, you're going to retrace a lot of old steps and missteps. You're going to peer into the future. You're going to get angry with each other. You're going to realize how dependent you are on each other. And those are all tiny little examples of everything that happens in our relationships over the course of a lifetime. So when you think about it, the benefits of understanding and having this kind of shared, one-of-a-kind memory outweigh the risks by far. And I think that's what Sour Toe Cocktail Club is about. It's about what we're willing to risk for love, for memory, for that one shining moment that nobody else will ever be able to take away.
So where can we read more about your opinions?
Well, first of all, Michael, thank you for having me today. I'm terribly grateful. Sour Toe Cocktail Club is available at all real world and online booksellers, and for your ebook readers, it's available at Amazon and Barnes and Noble for Kindle and Nook, and all e-booksellers for that matter. And your listeners can read a little bit more about the book and a little bit about me by just going to my website, www.ronfrancel.com.
Ron Francel, thanks for being on the Savage Nation.
Michael, thank you very much.
I'm Michael Savage. We'll be right back.
Savage.
Come on, that's ridiculous. But identity theft is something you have to take seriously. What if someone stole your credit cards and tried to destroy your life? Don't be a victim. Call my advertiser, LifeLock, today. Call LifeLock now at 1-800-LOCK-485 and get 60 risk-free days just for Savage listeners. 1-800-LOCK-485. Call them now.
It is.
is the Savage Nation. So we're going to talk about Kane, who is the antidote. He's the opposite to Obama. He is the antidote to Obama. It says God sent him down on the planet to be the antidote to Obama. In other words, to Trump, Obama's playing the race card. We have a man now who says that Obama's actually made race relations worse than they've been in 100 years. I agree with him. I've said the same thing on my show. It's interesting because I was on a station in Atlanta, WSB, for years, and Herman Cain, I think his show followed mine for many years. Now, how much of those ideas are his and how many of them are mine, I don't know, but many of them are excellent. He delivers them beautifully. I'd love to see him debate him. But before I do that, I teased you before the break with this critical mass. Now, how many of you listening to the show know what I'm talking about? Raise your bicycle hands. In San Francisco, New York, Chicago, and other major cities, bicycle gangs take over the city on the last Friday of every month and tie up bridges and tie up major arteries, and they let them get away with it. Now, if I were mayor, I never would have let them get away with it. I would have had the police arrest them and seize their bicycles, and I would have given each of them 30 days hard labor. But, okay, we have no leadership at any level in this country. Whether it be the lowliest city or the highest office in America, all you have is corruption, greed, and graft. So now you have an out-of-control system with these rats on bicycles, whee, racing by, laughing at everybody. And you see poor people have worked all day trying to get home, etc. Or you see people in an ambulance trying to get to a hospital. They don't care. They think they're on a college campus just having a good time. So 3 in the morning, Saturday morning, I came up with the answer how to defeat him. And I'm going to throw it out to you for free because I hope to God some people listen to me. Here is how you beat the protesters, the bicycle rats who block up the roads. What trumps a bicycle? A wheelchair. What you get is 20 people in wheelchairs in a crosswalk wanting to use the crosswalk when these lily-white rats on bicycles are having a good time blocking the road. And you get the wheelchair coalition trying to cross the street. And you let them just wheel out in front of these bicycle animals, and you'll see 1,000 bicycles crash into each other, backing up across the streets, and that'll put an end to them. If enough bicycle rats are stopped by the wheelchair coalitions in this country, you've got them beat. In other words, you can fight fire with fire. There is no other way to beat them, and that is my strategy for beating the bicycle gangs. And I'm telling you that you fight fire with fire on every level. How do you think Obama is going to be beaten? By a rich white man named Romney? Never. Never. They tried that game. It won't work. Michelle is going around acting like the victim. Here she is abusing the White House, abusing Air Force Two, abusing a taxpayer, living like a queen of the highest order and complaining that she's a downtrodden minority because it worked for her all her life. Michelle Obama got where she is by being an angry lady and using the race card every day of her life. Just get mad at the man and look how far she's gotten. So why stop now? So what you do is you go to the richest white man's houses, you take money from them, and then you curse them and tell them that they're the problem. And they applaud you because they're weaklings and they're stupid. Okay? So how do you defeat the Obamas? You bring up a black man who appears out of nowhere by God himself, who is a conservative, who made it on his own, who's got a degree in mathematics, another in computer science, and the man can defeat Obama. I think I have the answer. Yes, I say liberalism is a mental disorder, but a study just came out that said antidepressants are now used by 11% of Americans. Well, I'll go on record and tell you right now, I get depressed, but I would never use an antidepressant. I'm depressed from Obama. I'm depressed from the Democrat Socialists of America. I'm depressed from a lack of law and order. I'm depressed by the degenerates in the school system. I don't need a medication to tell me I'm living in nirvana. Antidepressants used by 11% of American ages 12 and older. You hear what the doctors have done to you? Antidepressants keep a lot of people functional, according to new data from the so-called federal government. 11% of Americans ages 12 and older take the medication. Most common prescription drug used by people ages 18 to 44. Almost 25% of all women ages 40 to 59 have been prescribed antidepressants by shyster doctors. So that's what's going on. The medical pharmaceutical establishment has doped up the population. They have doped up the population, which is how a man like Obama can wind up in the White House. You're taking your soma, you feel nothing, you think nothing, you know nothing, and yet you do what you're told. So therefore, the manipulators can get away with it. A guy like Schumer can get up there and say that the rich are the bad, the rich should pay more money, and you don't even know he gets his money from the rich. Paxil, Celexa, Effexor, Wellbutrin, Zoloft, poisons, chemical toxins, every last one of them. Poisons, they're poisoning your mind and poisoning your liver. Poisoning you. Flush them down the toilet. When you read that 11% of adults are on antidepressants, which basically dull your feelings, you can see how the political manipulators get away with it. That's, in plain English, what it is. That's how incompetence and in the White House, incompetence in the Congress, get away with it, because you don't care. You're dulling your feelings. I understand that. Many of you don't want to care. Instead of drinking two glasses of wine at night, as many people have done from the beginning of recorded civilization, since wine was first developed in ancient Iran, Persia, as it were, people have used wine to mitigate some of life's vicissitudes. They use some big multisyllabic words. But now, with the advent of the medico-pharmaceutical establishment, who have connived to declare virtually all of the attributes of life into an illness, whatever it may be, a syndrome of this, a syndrome of that, they declare it an illness, they put it into the medical book, and then they prescribe an antidepressant for human emotions and human feelings and human trials and tribulations. You have basically a drugged Western population of the West is drugged.
Savage.